Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to another DTNS Labs interview edition. I'm Tom Merritt, and joining me again, it's good to have Jack Conti from Patreon back. How's it going, Jack?
What's up, Tom? I'm doing great.
People who have been listening to this podcast for 3 months or so may remember we talked to Jack just 3 months ago about Patreon. But in the course of that conversation, we kind of started to touch on topics related to just how the internet works, and we didn't have time at the moment. So consider this part two, where we talk about things about generally how the internet works, how it used to work, where it's going. That sounds about right, right?
That's right on.
Well, I want to start with the premise that the internet used to be a subculture of its own. And there's always been subcultures within the internet. But the internet always felt like, oh, us on the internet. We have memes. We have bands we like. We have different things. And the internet has now become massively adopted. Everybody uses the internet. There's no more of this, like, what is the World Wide Web? Everybody uses it. And as it has gone from being a subculture, it stopped having the advantages that you have of being a subculture and has started having the problems you have as mass adoption. What do you think of that premise?
Yeah, I guess that feels really right on and insightful to me. And although I have to say, I'm not one of those folks that that thinks or that has sort of like a dystopian view or is pessimistic about the future of the internet. I think there are a lot of things wrong with the web. But then again, like, this is a new tool that we've all just, like, over the last 10 years, we've all kind of looked up and been like, oh, shit. Like, there's a lot of, like, problems that come along with this tool. And I think now it's our social responsibility to make some adjustments and to fix a lot of those problems, which, I think we will do. Humans are so good at that. You know, we see problems, we fix them. So I think we'll address those things over time. And I agree with you. I think as it's become more and more adopted, it's become very clear that, it's not this perfect utopia that we all dreamt of.
Yeah, we all thought maybe it would be. If there's a problem with the way I stated it, it's the idea that I don't mean to say there were not problems when it was a subculture. There absolutely were, but they were different problems. And I think what I'm trying to hit on is some of the things that were advantages, that were perks in the smaller days, are the problems now. And if we solve those problems, like you say, I think it's very right for you to point out, if we solve those problems, then having a massively popular internet isn't necessarily a bad thing at all. It could be a very good thing. But let's take one example. One advantage in the olden days was I can be anonymous. I can say whatever I want. There are no rules that stop me. I can broadcast to everyone. All of those things I just said were things that people loved about Usenet. They loved about news groups and are also the things people point at on Facebook and Twitter and elsewhere as, like, look at these people. They can say whatever they want. They can be anonymous. They don't have to be beholden, and yet they can broadcast to everyone. Like, we've gone from that being a cool thing to being something that causes issues.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you think about you know, the way I like to sort of think about that is in the broad context of human evolution and the constraints of social interaction. You know, we've clearly developed over, you know, millions of years, and we have millions of years of evolutionary biology governing the laws of social interaction, and over millions of years we've zigged and we've zagged and we've kind of created these beings that have functional relationships with each other. And then over the last decade, suddenly you strip away like all the physical cues, all the vocal cues, all the information that you get from like pitch and tone of voice and inflection and you know, and all of our ability to like read another human being and all of the sort of non-data sense. And holy cow, now we've had only 10 years to deal with that. It took us millions of years to like become functional beings. It may take a long time for us to figure out the dynamics of anonymous interaction at scale. It's not surprising to me at all that that it's such a shit show only 10 years into like trying to figure out this new system of social interaction.
Well, like you said, at scale too. It's like we not only stripped out all those things you talked about, but also now you're not limited by the size of your village or the number of people you run into in a day. You can, everybody can talk to everybody all the time, which brings that spam problem in of only a very small percentage of people can cause a big problem. There's only a small percentage of people have ever sent spam, but because a small percentage of people responded to it, it was worth them doing. And so these two small percentages ended up to be a big inconvenience for everybody else.
That's an incredible insight, actually. I mean, I think about, I kind of think about the analog to that in the real world. Sometimes I would really love to have someone do a kind of like a consulting project, a market sizing project on physical junk mail, like the crap that gets sent out. If you look at the time to design it, the time to like print and manufacture, the cost of the ink and the materials and the packaging, the cost of the postage, the cost of the mail person's time to take the envelope and put it in, like if you were to add all of that up for like, you know, what's equivalently like a 0.1 or 0.2% conversion rate on most of those. Like, I don't know what the actual is, probably very small.
Right.
Like that just feels like such a waste. It feels like so much energy and time and money going to something, to your point, that just like affects such a tiny number of people at the end of the day. And for everyone else, it's this huge inconvenience.
Yeah. And the beauty of the internet has always been the lack of barriers. The to me anyway, it has been the, I don't have to ask a bunch of people and get a ton of permission. I can just go and do my thing. And I don't need a massive amount of people to like it. If you know, the true 5,000 fans or however you want to see it, if you get enough people interested, it's worth doing. So it can work in for you as well in a way that doesn't necessarily have to inconvenience a lot of people. But how do we reconcile that with the current feelings that are permissionless is the problem? The fact that, you know, you're just out there thinking you can do whatever you want is the problem. We have copyright crackdowns and we have harassment crackdowns, and all of these things are done with a positive motivation of I want to make the world a better place, but they are also running up against the thing that has allowed us to create a lot of the things that are amazing about the internet.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I like to think of it as just, you know, the trade-offs of the internet, and you know, the thing that you said about, you know, 1,000 true fans. To me, look, I don't want to say that makes everything worth it, but the ability for a human being to have their voice heard when there's something important, like either they're really good at something or they saw something that's important or they're holding somebody accountable to good behavior or they have interesting art that they want to share with the world, the accessibility of and our ability to now do that is just so motivating and exciting to me. And just from a species level, like the fact that our species cracked the code, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's something important here. And now we have the distribution channel to like get that out to every other member of our species on the planet. Like, wow, that is such a wonderful thing. And it's going to come along with a lot of problems and trade-offs. And, I'm still in the camp that I think it's the right trade to make for now. And let's solve the other problems that come along with it.
Yeah. And I think the other, like you say, it's worth the trade-off because it allows people to do things that they'd never been able to do before. Do mm-hmm. you worry, though, that in the course of fixing these problems that need to be fixed, in combination with the fact that we see the consolidation of a lot of the operation of the internet under a few companies, depending on which acronym, it could be Google, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, maybe Microsoft, maybe Netflix. GAFA, GANGFA, I've seen FANG, I've seen them all. But it's a small number of companies starting to provide if you want to make video, YouTube or Amazon's Twitch, those, you know, Google or Amazon, those are the ways. If you want to if you want to publish audio, it's got to be on Spotify or on Siri or, you know, on Apple. Do you worry that we're not going to be able to make our way independently outside of that? Is that going to keep getting more and more consolidated?
I do worry about that. I don't know what the answer is to that. But yeah, I mean, I think with technology companies especially, I do think that there is something fundamentally different when it comes to the dynamics of automation and its effect on winner-take-all economies. I think automation augments the tendency toward winner-take-all sorts of situations, which I think explains a lot of the consolidation that we're seeing. And there can still be competitors that emerge. And, I believe in a free market. I believe in competition. I believe in all those things. And still, like, you're right. There's something that feels very weird about the level of control. We need to separate that weirdness and that problem, at least from my standpoint, from like something around the politics of like the government controlling those things. Like that to me is an equally bad solution. So
you're trading one control for another there.
You're trading one control for the other. So yeah, what the solution is, I don't know. But I agree with you that like it definitely feels a little scary. Yeah, it's scary.
And I think what's scary is it's not the first time the internet has run into a problem like that. We had AOL, way back in the day. I remember a lot of people saying AOL is going to end the internet because they're building this walled garden. And of course, it didn't work because people are like, but I want the things that are outside the walls. And when I say it didn't work, I mean it didn't end up having that effect. AOL worked fine for a long time. It still exists. I think this is the first time we've seen it at scale. And so I hear a lot of people who used to say, well, don't worry, you can't control the internet. The internet always routes around, like I said, saying, I don't know, maybe this time it can't. Maybe this time it's met its match. Maybe mm-hmm. these walls are too high to scale.
I mean, what do you say? Like, I definitely share those concerns. I think I'm starting to think of the internet more and more as not the internet, but the reflection of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The internet really is starting to feel like an organism. And to quote Jurassic Park, nature finds a way.
Yeah.
So I would say even if we try to control it, nature is going to find a way. Like I think that's one of the beauties about the internet is it does reflect, organisms. I do think that it will find a way it's going to kind of evolve into something that is beneficial. Again, maybe that's me, the eternal optimist speaking, but even if we can't see it right now, that's just kind of my gut on it.
Yeah. As long as the dinosaurs don't break free of the park, as long as the nature doesn't find out. No, I think that's fascinating because maybe the reason it feels different is because the internet is closer than ever to mimicking humanity. And humanity has always had large institutions and small institutions. We've always had mass culture and subculture, to oversimplify it.
Control and government. And we've had those dynamics, and now they're manifesting within the internet.
And on the internet up till now, it's always been like, oh, something gets too centralized, we tear it apart. But maybe it's finally got to the part where you don't have to choose. There can be large things and small things. You just need to figure out how that works. And right now,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen.
Feels like the large things are overtaking everything, but if you're right, hopefully you're right, I want you to be right, nature finds a way, and we create an ecosystem out that shares the space.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's, I think we're starting to see I forgot who I saw a tweet recently that showed, you know, the top 10 companies over a period of 10 years and then the next top 10 companies over the next period of 10 years. And I think the hypothesis was that the top 10 companies are going to start sticking around for longer.
Okay.
And I don't know. I think because of this, like, because of the effect of like, you know, automation and engineering and its ability to keep companies on top. I don't know if we're actually going to see that. Time's going to tell.
Yeah.
But I guess on a little bit of a separate point here, one of the reasons that I think the internet is so quickly starting to reflect like gut humanity, just like pure humanity. If you think about what all these platforms are doing, especially social platforms, you know, they're removing friction in the communication process. And in doing that, if you do that well at scale, you basically remove the gap, you remove the delta between what a person feels and thinks and what they communicate to everyone else. Like, essentially, that's what these platforms are doing. They're trying to get exact, like, let's just take out all the friction, whatever it is that you're thinking and feeling, like, get it out in a post, send it to the rest of the world. And so now we're all like looking up and going like, oh my gosh, like, this is brutal.
This is what people think? Yeah, we're all like Jack Kerouac's, just straight to the title.
Totally, yeah. And everyone's got an opinion and everybody's jumping into the ring and fighting and... And yeah, I mean, it's to me, it's no surprise. Like that's what these companies are shooting for. You know, mm-hmm. their revenue is directly proportional to engagement, to time spent, you know?
Yeah. And I've seen so many articles about how that machine is tuned to make you not be able to stop and, you know, to try to keep you going. And so that's no surprise that people do that. I think the other thing that I've noticed is a lot of times I will say something very carefully written because mm-hmm. I know there, if there's room for misinterpretation, somebody's going to misinterpret it.
Exactly.
And I still get someone reply with a misinterpretation because they're not considering just what I wrote.
Exactly.
They're seeing it in the context of everyone else in their timeline or everything else they've been reading that day on the news or
exactly.
hearing on the TV. And so what I said takes on a different meaning depending on who read it and when.
Yeah. So that's such a tremendous insight, Tom. I feel that more than ever right now. And actually, I think YouTubers have had some early practice on this, of everybody's got an opinion because you've had to deal with the comments section.
Sure.
One thing, and especially around misinterpretation and communication, one thing I think folks forget is that language itself is a completely imperfect model of thought. It is a very low fidelity, in fact, it's a low fidelity model of an idea, of a truth, of physics. And I think we see that low fidelity of language manifesting all the time now on the internet. Somebody says something, or not just the internet, even in your day-to-day interaction, I'm starting to realize, oh my gosh, I said this. That person interpreted that in some completely different way than what my intention was, because the medium of communication is a summary. It's a compressed version of the actual reality.
Yeah, and everyone becomes a mini lawyer and says, well, exactly. You said these are your words, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, again, that brings us back to sort of the idea of like tone and inflection. And there is so much information in that and in tone, in inflection, in passion, in how much sweat is on my brow and how many times I'm blinking as I say that, and if my voice is stuttering, right? There's like so much information in all the nonverbal elements of communication, and a lot of that gets completely lost on the web.
Yeah, and I think you're right. We'll get better at it. People will start to grow up in a world where you have to realize, oh, written communication doesn't have those emotions and I shouldn't react that way. And, that'll be part of childhood for people, right? Is learning that
totally.
Lesson. Right now, we're all children in that respect.
Yeah.
We're all growing up.
Yeah. We're all dealing with something really freaking weird for the first time. And I think we often, like, it's become so normalized over the last 10 years, we forget how weird it is. But, like, to strip away all of that extra information from a social interaction, that's, like, crazy.
Yeah.
That's really amazing. I'm surprised we're functioning as well as we are.
That's actually a really good point. Like, you know, I mean, things as well, and this it sheds light on things as bad as it seems is sort of a thing based on the fact that you read everybody else telling you that things are bad, when objectively, like, if you like shut off your screen and be like, do I have enough to eat? Do I have shelter? Am I, you know, do I have friends? I mean, some of you don't, and that's different. But the majority of people are like, actually, you know, I'm not living in the Middle Ages with leprosy out in the mud in a colony.
Right.
You know, I'm doing all right. Yeah,
I think one of the reasons it feels so bad to people, because you can't. I mean, we can't like dispute that. Like everybody talks about like, you know, why is 2016, 2017, why is it so shitty? Well, I mean, actually, there's a lot of reasons it's shitty. But I think one of the reasons, is that for really the first time, at scale, at least, everyone is an investigative reporter.
Uh-huh.
And now, like, we've poked holes in the black box and we can see all of the bullshit that's happening.
Yeah.
We know about the gross behavior. We know about the oppression. We know about, all of these things that were it's not that they were being forced down before, although some folks were trying to force them down, but there was no magnifying glass shining on them. And if anything, you know, I think social media has been poking holes in the black box and giving, just letting people know about all the crap that's actually going on. And it turns out there's a lot of crap going on. It's not that 2016 or 2017 is any worse than previous years. It's that, like, for the first time, we know how bad it is. And like, that's really important. I think we should know how bad it is. It's going to feel bad to find that out, but it's really important. It's the first step in making it better.
Totally. And right now we're dealing with the fact that there isn't the natural filter on it. It used to be you only found out how bad it was when Walter Cronkite told you at 6 o'clock, right? Now you can find out how bad it is anytime you want at these services that, as you pointed out earlier, are dedicated to making you pay attention all the time.
Yeah.
So it's going to amplify it.
Exactly.
I think about my Uncle Harry a lot. He gave me a pamphlet about how Jimmy Carter was the Antichrist when I was a kid. And I was like, this is really weird. And my dad's like, don't pay any attention to that. And that was the end. Nowadays, there are, you know, Uncle Harry is available 24/7 and, yeah. you know, and in your face, like you yep. can't get away from it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, I think the platforms are starting to really take that seriously. I mean, I know that's a little bit of an unpopular opinion. I know a lot mm-hmm. of folks don't believe in leadership in those companies. Look, I have plenty of problems with those companies, but I do trust that leadership there. And I know some of the folks, you know, I do trust that they're good people and they care about this stuff and they want to fix it. I hope we start to see Facebook put its money where its mouth is in terms of like community building. I don't know that they're going to have success, but I hope they do at least what they say they want to do.
Yeah.
That would be really great.
Well, the tricky part is I don't think anyone knows how to fix it properly. Inside or outside Facebook, like it's all experimental now.
Mm-hmm.
So even if your heart's in the right place, which it very well may be, what you try might not work. And then people are going to point and like, see, we told you they didn't want to fix it. And it's like, well, no, that maybe they just tried something and it didn't work. So, you know, there's a lot that needs to happen. I put a lot of my hopes in experiments with the decentralized internet, not just blockchain stuff, but a lot of the so-called Web 3.0 stuff.
Totally.
That maybe one of those things is going to catch on and provide an alternative. And the companies that exist, if they take advantage of it, will benefit from that. And if they don't, they'll be the next Friendster. But, you know, that's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about blockchain and cryptocurrency. And I'm excited to see where that's going. I am not invested in any of that. And I don't own any cryptocurrency. Just because what's exciting to me is not the financial ramifications of those things. I don't view them as investment opportunities. I'm just excited about the technology and what it could mean for the world.
Yeah. Because the big advantage that the big companies have is centralized servers. And if blockchain suddenly, you know, is able to eventually make that less of an advantage, that changes mm-hmm. a lot of things.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I think it's a really, God, it's such an exciting time. I mean, I'm sure people sort of feel like that whenever they're alive, but what a weird, exciting, crazy moment to be alive in human history, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jack, thank you so much for taking the time to have this second part of our chat. This is really fun.
Of course. Thanks, Tom. Anytime.
If folks want to follow you, find out more about what you got going on, where should they go?
Just at Jack Conte on Twitter. That's my platform of choice.
Excellent. And of course, Jack is the head of Patreon.com, and you can support this show at patreon.com/DTNS. You get these episodes early if you do, and everybody else gets them in the public feed at dailytechnewsshow.com. Talk to you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.